This is New Media B on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Kepsia Gu.
And I am Marwa Jalili. Let's talk media.
We have media news from Australia.
Australia is having a problem with haters. Anti-immigrant Aussies are using generative AI to create nasty social media posts attacking Muslims. What can be done to stop these AI-generated images and videos from poisoning social media down under?
AI news from India.
India is a high-tech nation with big AI dreams. But can AI grow without becoming a threat to personal privacy? Can the government of India protect privacy and unleash AI?
Russian disinformation news from Estonia.
What can we learn from Estonia? It's a small Balkan nation not far from Russia. How has Estonia learned to defend itself from Russia's disinformation campaigns? Can little Estonia keep the Russian bear at bay?
Press freedom from Iran.
Is there any room for independent journalism in the Islamic Republic of Iran? Does the government keep a close watch on journalists? I have a report on press freedom in Iran today.
State media in North Korea.
Speaking of censorship, let's talk about North Korea. What is the state of media in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea? Is it all state controlled? Can citizens get news from the outside world? Is there any press freedom north of the 38th parallel, or is it all government propaganda?
The Great Firewall of China.
We have social media and internet news from China. How does the government control social media and the internet? Is it all surveilled and censored, or can the people of China express their thoughts online without fear of the state?
Saudi Arabia's soft power.
Saudi Arabia is trying to change our minds. Saudi Arabia is an oil-rich nation with an image problem. Can Saudi Arabia make friends and influence people by buying culture, sports, and celebrity influencers? All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. Let's get started with a trip down under to Australia with my co-host, Kamsi Agu. There is a conflict on Australian social media over immigration. Hateful posts have been flying around the internet. But there is something odd about this wave of images and videos. They have been generated with AI tools. Kamsi, why has hate speech and bigotry risen towards Australians of color?
Hate speech against Australians of color hasn't been new, obviously, and unfortunately, it's always been a very prominent discussion. But as of recent years, a lot of hate has risen because of a lot of spread of AI images and videos utilizing pro-Western colonization and Islamophobic rhetoric. For example, the Tackling Hate director, Matteo Vergani, who studies a lot of hate and ethnicity groups in Australia, he said that 69.6% of Aboriginal Indigenous people, 36.1% of Muslims, 35.9% of Indians, and 33.8% of East Asians all experience discrimination.
How is generative AI being used as hate speech towards Australians of color?
There are a lot of examples of homes of Aboriginal Australians being depicted as tents or in areas that are less civilized, in quotes, while compared to their white counterparts that usually have it be seen as tidy or neat or organized. So it kind of perpetuates this notion of the idea that anyone with darker skin is not seen as, like, well-respected or neat compared to their white counterparts. In addition, there are also a lot of AI images being used to depict Sydney, one of the most popular cities in Australia, being seen with, like, a lot of stereotypically Indian architecture and or material. For example, one of the an online creator was founded, had shared information to Australia Today saying that there was an AI-generated video of Sydney's roads resembling a lot of congested Indian streets, which further perpetuates a lot of these stereotypes.
How are Australians of color responding to the hate?
A lot of Australians of color are looking toward the government to try to combat these sort of different AI images and videos. And they're also trying to spread their own types of social media posts that showcase a more accurate version of their culture.
Does the Australian government plan to stop or at least mitigate the spread of these hate posts?
They do. So the government is looking to essentially have social media companies inspect their algorithms to make sure that not only is AI not being used to be generated with these posts, but also to make sure that these posts aren't being allowed if they're spreading racist hate speech. And they are also utilizing their basic online safety expectations of 2021 to enforce these policies. For New Media B, I'm Kamsi Gu. Back to you, Marwa.
Thank you, Kamsi. Felicia Kanjemi is stepping up to the mic in Studio A. Felicia is here to talk about artificial intelligence in India. There is a dynamic tech sector in India with lots of digital startups. Most Indians have smartphones and use social media. What about artificial intelligence? The online world is changing because every social media platform is incorporating artificial intelligence. But there is a problem. AI needs to suck up oceans of data to be intelligent. Should the Indian government help AI grow by feeding it the personal data of millions of citizens? Or should the government regulate the use of AI and protect personal privacy? Felicia, what made you want to report on social media and artificial intelligence in India?
I think it's important to talk about social media and AI in India because they are changing the way people live and work. The social media helps people connect and share ideas, while AI is making things easier and smarter in many areas. India has a huge population and a fast-growing digital world, so understanding how these technologies are affecting everyday life is really important.
How is AI changing social media in India?
AI is changing social media in India in, like, multiple ways. It helps the platforms recommend content that users might like, making their experience more personalized. AI also helps in detecting and removing harmful content like fake news or hate speech to keep the online space safer. Also, AI-powered chatbots are being used by businesses to talk to customers quickly and efficiently, and AI makes social media more engaging and safer for everyone to use in India.
Are people worried about their privacy online?
Yes, many people in India and around the world are worried about the privacy online. With more social media and apps collecting personal information, some people feel unsure and unsafe of their data, that it might be misused or shared without their permission. There is also concerns about fake news, hacking, and how other companies use information.
What can be done to protect users' rights?
To protect users' rights online, several steps can be taken. The government can create and enforce strict laws that control how companies collect, use, and share personal data. Companies should also be transparent about what information they gather and give users clear options to privacy settings and data control. People should also be educated about online privacy and how to protect themselves, like using stronger passwords and being careful about what they share. There also should be regular checks and penalties for companies that don't follow privacy rules. For New Media Beat, I'm Felicia Kanjemi. Back to you, Marwa.
Thanks, Felicia. Have you heard of Estonia? Could you find it on a map? Shane Kelb knows something about Estonia. He knows that there are tensions between Russia and Estonia. What does that have to do with the media? Let's ask Shane after the break.
Estonia is a digital powerhouse, but it is not a big nation. There are about 1.3 million Estonians. That's less than half the population of Brooklyn. Estonia is more of a tech startup than a nation. What it lacks in size, it makes up for with its digital ambitions. But Estonia is being bullied by Russia, the dominant power in Eastern Europe. Shane Kelb is here to tell us about Estonia's battle to contain Russian disinformation. Shane, start us off with a brief intro to Estonia. Where is Estonia and why does that matter?
Estonia is located on the border of Russia by the Baltics with its two other Baltic states, Latvia and Lithuania. And it matters a lot because Estonia, with the other two Baltic states, were a part of the Soviet Union.
Why is Estonia a key target for Russian disinformation campaigns?
Estonia is a major target because around 22% of its population is ethnically Russian, and many of them primarily speak Russian. This makes them more exposed to the Russian language propaganda and false media narratives. Estonia was once part of the Soviet Union, which fuels the Kremlin's desire to reassert influence over it.
How has Estonia used its media as a defense mechanism instead of a vulnerability?
Russian narratives dominate. Estonia supports independent Russian language media that provide factual reporting and counter Kremlin propaganda. This gives Russian-speaking citizens access to trustworthy news in their native language by strengthening homegrown media instead of censoring foreign ones. Estonia ensures that citizens can think critically rather than fall for misinformation. It's a proactive and democratic way to fight disinformation.
What role does media literacy play in Estonia's defense against disinformation?
Estonia's education system includes a 35-hour media literacy module that teaches students how to analyze sources and identify false information. This widespread training has made Estonians among the most media literate citizens in Europe. As a result, Russian propaganda has less influence due to people are more skeptical of unverified information. The success of these programs has even led to measurable decreases in Kremlin-related disinformation activity.
What tactics does Russia use to spread disinformation in Estonia?
Russia uses staged videos, fake news reports, and manipulated media to create false narratives about Estonia. Common themes include portraying the country as a police state, claiming it suppresses Russian identity, or accusing it of erasing Soviet history. These efforts often peak during symbolic events like Victory Day on May 9th. However, Estonia's fact-checkers and journalists have been successfully in debunking these falsehoods quickly.
Why has Estonia resisted Russian disinformation more effectively than other countries?
Estonia's resilience comes from its strong national identity, high media literacy, and history of skepticism towards Russian influence. The population is aware of the dangers of propaganda, so they approach Russian media with caution. Estonia's transparent governance and collaboration with independent journalists also strengthen public trust. Together, these factors make Estonia a model for how small nations can stand firm against large-scale disinformation efforts. From New Media B, I am Shane Kelb. Back to you, Kamsi.
Thank you, Shane. My co-host Mara Jalili is up next. Iran is much bigger than Estonia. It is almost 90 million people, while Estonia has just over a million people. It is also a theocratic republic. It is officially called the Islamic Republic of Iran. Most Iranians are Shia Muslims, and a minority are Sunni Muslims. How much of a republic is it? Is it a democracy or theocracy? Is there a free and independent press in Iran? Or does the government have Tehran control the media? Here to discuss press freedom in Iran is Marwa Jalili. Marwa, can you talk to us about human rights and civil liberties in Iran? Is it an open society where journalists can report without fear of harassment?
So journalists are not entitled to independent reporting. They're not able to do it freely. In order for journalists to report on news, they have to do it while hiding. However, some reporters, despite the threats they face of being shut down or arrested, continue to report in Iran. The legal framework of Iran also plays a part on independent reporting. They have Article 24, which allows for press freedom. However, they have the press law of 1986 that gives authorities the right to stop journalists if they see that the information they are spreading endangers the Islamic regime, and also, you know, they can't criticize the supreme leader.
Why is Iran so strict about press freedom?
Iran is a country that is ruled by Islamic values. Iran is so strict about press freedom because they view it as a threat to Islamic values. They also believe that it is being manipulated by foreign forces, in which the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei had mentioned. However, others believe that the Iranian government is overusing the power to silence journalists.
How has this affected people in the free press?
The restrictions upon press freedom in Iran makes it challenging for people in the free press to report independently and has an effect on their lives. People in the free press face threats of shutdown or arrest. Journalists have been detained, and as of today, there are 21 journalists arrested. Journalists also have to quit their jobs and have to find new ones, and due to the level of restrictions and threats, there has been a trend of self-censorship among journalists in Iran. They also face home seizures. An example of this is Zeila Bani Yaqub, in which she faced a home seizure. They confiscated her and her husband's phone and laptop. This also affected the Tehran's Provincial Journalists Association, since their building has been evacuated, in which the association had said that it was due to political pressure.
How do citizens in Iran receive their news?
For the most part, most news websites in Iran are state-governed. However, citizens in Iran receive their news from sources that are abroad. They also use illegal satellite dishes, which are banned in Iran. 70% of Iranians use these. There are also journalists operating in Iran despite the threats that they face. For Nur Media Beat, I am Marwa Jalili. Back to you, Gamsi.
Thank you, Marwa. We are talking a lot about censorship today. Our next report is about one of the most infamous totalitarian nations, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, better known as North Korea. Kim Jong-un is the supreme leader of North Korea. He is a totalitarian dictator with little patience for press freedom. Mary Jane Hernandez has a report about media in North Korea. Mary Jane, are all the media owned by the state in North Korea? Is there any private or independent media at all?
So most of the media that is owned, or most of the media that comes out of North Korea is state-owned and surveillanced by the state. And if it doesn't comply with any of the state's rules, it is immediately removed. Journalists often have to appease the government in their reporting, otherwise they can't report in the nation.
What led the government to place these restrictions?
So most of these restrictions come from mostly Kim Jong-un wants everything to stay within the country or within the region. And he sort of believes that if there are outside influences, people won't respect his totalitarian rule. For New Media Beat, I'm Mary Jane. Back to you, Gamsi.
Thank you, Mary Jane. We have more media news for you. Jake Vitale has a report on internet censorship in China. And Joseph Butziak has a report about Saudi Arabian influence campaigns. Can Saudi Arabia buy our love? How much will the Saudi government invest to change our minds about human rights and civil liberties in Saudi Arabia? Stay with us.
We have media news from China about social media, the internet, and government censorship. Jake, what made you choose this topic for New Media Beat today?
Yeah, so I thought it important to spread awareness on just how sheltered Chinese citizens are. I mean, we're talking about a level of censorship that is second really to none besides maybe North Korea. These people are completely hidden from the entire global media as we know it today, and it is totally at the hands of their government.
What is the Great Firewall?
The Great Firewall is a large-scale censorship system that is completely integrated within the Chinese internet that filters and blocks content not expressly deemed acceptable by the Chinese government. It prevents people from accessing around 10,000 websites across the world, including, you know, normal websites that we would see in America, such as Google, YouTube, and the BBC. This effectively isolates Chinese internet users from much of the global web.
How does the Ministry of Information Industry Technology censor the Chinese people?
The Ministry of Information Industry Technology plays a key role in China's censorship system. It monitors and regulates what information can be shared or viewed, ensuring that only media and news approved by the government reach the public. This helps maintain the government's control over what citizens see and believe, and completely shelters Chinese citizens from the global media.
How has China's censorship extended past media and into internet hardware?
Yeah, so censorship in China goes beyond software controls and has even been built into hardware. Internet routers in China are programmed to automatically filter or block information the government deems unacceptable, showing how deeply censorship is embedded into the country's digital infrastructure.
What justification is given by China for their extensive censorship?
The Chinese government justifies its censorship by claiming it is necessary to stop the spread of false information, protect national security, and maintain social stability. Officials argue that these restrictions help keep order in a rapidly growing online world where they think that their national security and their sovereignty will be threatened by misinformation.
How do Chinese citizens try to work around?
Despite strict controls, many Chinese citizens find subtle ways to communicate about sensitive topics. They may use coded language, humor, or symbolic images to express opinions without drawing attention. I don't know if you guys have ever been on TikTok Live before, but in order to talk about anything sensitive, you would need to use coded language so as to maintain in good standing with their terms of service. It's very similar here in China, just except it's not just TikTok, it's all over their media. You got to use coded language. Sometimes you got to speak even like a child just to get past the TOS. However, these tactics are risky. Authorities often detect and delete such posts after realizing what is actually being said, and users can face punishment for sharing them. For New Media Beat, I'm Jake Vitale. Back to you, Marwa.
Thank you, Jake. Let's talk about media and soft power in Saudi Arabia with Joseph Budziak. Soft power is a concept coined by Joseph Nye in the 1980s to describe how nations could use cultural events, entertainment, sports, and media to influence the world without resorting to the hard power of force or economic sanctions. How has the Saudi government used its vast resources to invest in cultural and environment initiatives to improve its bad reputation? Can the Saudis buy celebrities and influencers and prestigious sporting events that will fix their image problem? Joseph, what is Saudi Arabia up to?
In recent years, Saudi Arabia has embarked on an ambitious journey of transformation marked by significant investments in cultural festivals and ecological initiatives. However, these efforts have been met with both enthusiasm and skepticism, raising important questions about the true motivations and impact of these changes.
What is Saudi Arabia trying to achieve through its recent cultural festivals?
Saudi is using cultural festivals to highlight its rich heritage and open up the country to global audiences. These events are meant to modernize its image and show that the kingdom is embracing creativity, entertainment, and global cultural exchange. The kingdom is working to reduce its long-standing dependence on oil revenues by developing new economic sectors by promoting entertainment and tourism. The government hopes to create jobs, attract international visitors, and boost national pride.
What concerns do critics have about Saudi Arabia's modernization efforts?
Critics and observers have mixed reactions to Saudi Arabia's modernization efforts. Supporters see the cultural and environmental initiatives as positive steps towards progress, economic growth, and greater global openness. However, critics worry that these projects serve more as an image-building exercise than genuine reform, arguing they may distract from ongoing issues such as human rights abuses, restrictions on free speech, and limited political freedoms.
How is the Saudi government allegedly influencing the media?
Reports indicate that Saudi authorities tightly control domestic media and discourage criticism of the royal family or government policies. The government also funds international PR campaigns and partnerships to ensure that global coverage presents the kingdom in a positive light.
What role does press freedom play in shaping perceptions of Saudi Arabia?
Press freedom, or the lack of it, plays a major role in how both citizens and outsiders view the country's reforms. Limited access to independent journalism makes it difficult to verify official claims or hold leaders accountable for abuses.
What is the broader question being asked about Saudi Arabia's transformation?
The key question is whether these reforms reflect genuine social and political progress or are primarily meant to improve the kingdom's global reputation. Many wonder if the government's push for modernization will eventually lead to greater openness or if it will remain a carefully managed performance of change. For New Media Beat, I'm Joseph Budziak. Back to you, Mara.
Thank you, Joseph.
That's all for New Media Beat. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Kamsi.
Thanks, Marwa. Our show is produced by Emily Savalos, Kevin Zales, and Jalal McCoy. Our fabulous engineer is Kevin Zales. My co-host is Marwa Jalali.
Today, we hear reports from Kamsi Agu, Joseph Budziak, Felicia Kanjemi, Mary Jane Hernandez, Shane Kelb, Jake Vitale, and myself, Marwa Jalali.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio and the Media Communications Department here at the State University of New York at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all our podcasts.